You're listening to the iHeartRadio Talk Network, and this is the Evan Solomon Show.
Hello, Canada. Happy Election Day. Happy September 20th. Happy Monday. And millions of you will be voting today. 5.8 million people have already voted in the advance poll, so a third of the electorate is already done. They're done. They're sitting back. They're waiting for the results to start rolling in tonight at about 7:30 Eastern time and then 9:30 Eastern time as the board start to shift. And then you'll have to wait late because BC will be critical. So this is it. This is the big dance. And it might be the last dance for some of the leaders if they don't win. And we got a great show. We're going to hear from you. What do you think this is about? Who do you want to win? What is the ballot box question to this election? Here's the framework as you're out there voting safely today, as we dig into a special edition of the Evan Solomon Show, and we'll hear from you and we'll hear from great people about this before at 6:30 Eastern. I'll leave not only this show, but then from 5 to 6 Power Play, then I'll join Lisa LaFlamme, CTV's chief news anchor and editor, and I'll be joining Lisa on the desk, and we got a great team, Amanda Lang, Omar Sachedina, Richard Madden, Anne-Marie Medawick, lots of special guests. We'll go from 6:30 Eastern basically till well after 2 a.m., so it's going to be a long day. There'll be a special radio special that will run from 8 p.m. until midnight, so tune into your local iHeart radio station, CTV News. .ca will have all the live results as they happen, so it's going to be a busy day. But what's it about? A lot of people are mad. A lot of people are mad at Justin Trudeau for calling it. A lot of people are mad that Aaron O'Toole has shifted the party. So let's build the frame. The framework today for me is the gamblers and the wild cards. The gamblers and the wild cards. Let's talk about the gamblers. Justin Trudeau, gambler number one. He gambles on calling an election in the middle of the fourth wave. He's got the support of Parliament. The NDP are supporting everything he's done. He thinks I can win. Rolls the dice. Decides no. Canadians need to say, I want a majority government. And he gambles on calling a federal election. Most Liberals will tell you that they think, for 2 days, 3 days, the electorate will be mad and they'll blame us. That burns off. It never burned off. Here's the gamble. Is he rewarded for calling the election and rewarded for how he's not only handled the pandemic, but his plan to recover from it? Or is he punished as a political opportunist who, in the middle of a fourth wave, took his eye off the ball and put his eye in the mirror and became a political opportunist? That is a big gamble. He needs 170 seats to get a majority. That's the magic number. There's no poll that shows he can get that. There's a thin scenario where he could possibly get 170, but I haven't seen a likely scenario. Most likely, it's a minority and maybe a reduced minority. So that's a big gamble. Gamble two is Aaron O'Toole. He is gambling that he can run as a true blue Harper conservative. Remember when he won the leadership, he was courting the social conservatives. He was criticizing Peter McKay as the progressive conservative. I'm true blue. And then he took the party, jumped them with a price on carbon. A lot of the Harper conservatives who had voted again, okay, they said, you know what? You can win the suburbs in Toronto. You can win the suburbs in Ontario. If you can, fine. But then he brought out Brian Mulroney, and he said famously, this is not your father's or your grandfather's party. I don't know who Brian Mulroney is, literally the grandfather of progressive conservatism. But he brings him out. Didn't bring out Stephen Harper. Brian Mulroney has not campaigned for the conservatives in decades. Under Stephen Harper, he was non-existent. And he brings him out, and he said he's tacked to the center. Gamble. Does that, A, win him the day? And if it does, he owns the party. If he doesn't win, does he alienate the Harper base, the social conservatives, and then what happens to his job? Gamble. And then the NDP, Jagmeet Singh's basically said, $214 billion of spending. I'm a hyper-progressive. I'm a progressive on steroids. And I'm going to do TikTok videos and And I hope that I can actually hold the vote. Trending at 19, 20, 21%, can he hold the vote? Remember, Jagmeet Singh lost 20 seats in 2019, 20 seats down. There's no math that says he wins 20 today. In two elections, he is going to have a reduced number than they were under Tom Mulcair, and he'll still declare victory. If he wins two seats, I think he'll win 10, 12 seats. He's the balance of power. He's got a stronger balance of power. And then there's the wild card. So there's the gamblers, and then there's the wild cards. And who are the wild cards? The PPC. Between 5 and 10%, depending on the poll. They have emerged riding the back of the anti-vax sentiment, a populist sentiment, a frustration at infringement on civil liberties. And Max Bernier and the People's Party are a protest movement, a populist movement. 75% of them are going to vote conservative, according to most polls. They could really split the vote. Wild card. Could he win Maxime Bernier in the Beauce, where he used to win? That's a Quebec seat where he used to be an MP. It's a good question. Wild card. And the question about the wild card is this the arrival permanently of a populist movement that will once again split the conservative vote like the Reform Party did, or does it fizzle out after the pandemic? Second wild card, collapse of the Green vote. Enemy Paul, Green Party leader, great performance in the debate. Basically, for the lion's share of the campaign, stayed in her Toronto Centre riding. If she doesn't win that, she's done. Got to win that riding, and it's close. Liberals hold it right now. She's got to win it. But if they didn't run candidates in 85 ridings, the Greens, that means that 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8% in various ridings, that's gone. That changes the splits. That vote will go to the NDP or the Liberals. That is for three-way races for the Conservatives. That's tough. They're going to get eaten on the right by the PPC in some ridings, and the collapse of the Greens may affect them. Wild card. And then we get, so you got the gamblers. You got the wild cards. I put the Bloc in there if they can actually grow. I don't think they will, but they had a interesting English language debate, and maybe Blanchette grows. But then there's scenarios and consequences, and we're going to talk about that today. This is what I mean by that. What if Justin Trudeau gets a thin minority government, as some polls predict? So thin minority means he needs 170 seats for a majority. Got about 155 now. What if he gets 139, 140, 130? And then the NDP go up. What's that scenario? One, he stays on in power, but the NDP have more power. So do they, if you're in the business community, are you worried that the Liberals who are already spending are going to be pushed to spend even more faster because we know the NDP policy? They'll have the muscle. What if the NDP are weak? He needs another support. So a thin minority government raises questions about what kind of Canada we're living in. Justin Trudeau would be punished. That means Canadians would say, we like the progressive agenda, but you need a chaperone. What if it's a thin minority conservative government? Justin Trudeau is done. If he loses, it's over. If he wins, he stays, even if he wins by two. But if he loses, this is a gamble and he's throwing away his political career. And Aaron O'Toole will put his stamp on the Conservative Party. The Harper stamp is erased and he'll put his own progressive conservative stance, if that's what he is, because he's flip-flopped a lot. But this would be a massive win and his gamble pays off. But then who does he dance with to pass legislation? The Bloc? Do the Liberals support him until they get their house in order? So the scenario of a thin conservative minority is fascinating as well. They need a dance partner to pass legislation. And by the way, what if it's a pretty strong Liberal minority, kind of status quo? Can Aaron O'Toole survive? I'll play you a clip later. Jenny Byrne, the former director of the Harper campaign and a longtime Harperite, says the Harper conservatives have felt so insulted by the price on carbon, the this is not your dad's party, the turn to the center, the trotting out of Brian Mulroney, that if Aaron O'Toole does not beat Justin Trudeau in this, the knives will be out for him. Even if he wins seats, remember, conservatives have little patience for people who lose. Aaron O'Toole knows that. He watched Andrew Scheer take the Liberals from majority to minority. He gained seats, he won the popular vote in 2019, and Andrew Scheer lost his job. So we're going to find the latest. Nick Nanos joins us next with the latest. We'll put all this to the war room as we game out the high-stakes pandemic election.
Get complete federal election coverage tonight starting at 6:30. Now back to Evan Solomon on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome back to the program on Election Day. Get out there and vote, whatever you do. I know the polls will tell you the storylines already, and we've heard that. But as, and a colleague of mine just wrote me a really interesting note, colleague from The Globe, and really smart journalist, and he said, you know, the Liberal vote in the GTA has decided all this, hasn't it? Is this going to be a Liberal minority? At what level? So are these the storylines that you're talking about, the gamble, the Aaron O'Toole gamble, does it pay off, the Trudeau gamble? And I responded to him, and I said, look, that may be true, what the polls say, but in the end, voters make decisions. And people got to get out there and vote. And voter turnout is key. We don't know what's going to happen in the mail-in ballots. We don't know how the advance polls work out. But what I did say is, the good news is we can talk about the scenarios with Nick Nanos, the chief data scientist at Nanos Research right now, in our daily segment, Nanos on the Numbers.
There has been a slow and steady increase, what we know from our research in the past. The key takeaway now, Canadians...
Nanos on the Numbers.
Now, I want to tell everybody that these numbers, we have to, these are the last polls that you can actually legally report on. No poll that's published today you can actually report on. So you can't report on polls on Election Day, but this means you can report on any poll before midnight, last night, and we are going to do that with Nick Nanos. Hello, sir. You still standing? You ready to go?
I'm ready to go. Hey, Evan, you know, today is Super Bowl Monday for pollsters. There will be tears of joy or sadness. What do you say?
Well, it is. It is the big game, and it's a long one. And I don't know if a lot of people were wanting even a Super Bowl, and that's actually going to be one of the questions for Mr. Trudeau. Like, hey, buddy, there's a lot of games left to play, and all of a sudden you called the election. Where do we stand as voters now are streaming out in the millions, and what's the story as you're seeing it? What's the expectation here, Nick Nanos?
Well, in the survey that was conducted and released yesterday, so there's not a new survey, but the survey from yesterday, we have the Liberals at 32.4, Conservatives 31.2, NDP 17.5, Bloc 7.5, People's Party 6.6, Green Party 4.5. So in that one-day snapshot, what we get basically is a statistical dead heat like we've had for the close of the campaign between the Liberals and the Conservatives. And the stuff to watch, Evan, I think, People's Party, are those folks going to show up? They could be a spoiler for the Conservatives and also the New Democrats. You know, the thing is, we showed a bit of negative pressure on NDP support between Saturday and Sunday. Are there some people that are strategically voting in order to try to block the Conservatives? Those are the two parties to watch for sure.
Well, we'll talk about those. You know, and I've divided this into to the two big gambles and the wild cards, and the People's Party, obviously a major wild card. Although the Green Party's 4.5, I want to dig into that for a second. But I know those are top line numbers, 32.4, 31.2 for Liberals and Conservative, respectfully, Nick Nanos. But let's dig that. What people have to understand is a dead heat on top is not a dead heat below the surface because of what's called vote efficiency, where the Liberals get their votes, where the Conservative gets their votes. And does that determine the outcome? Because people keep hearing, and I want you, our listeners, say, wait a second, I keep hearing it's going to be a Liberal minority. How is that if they're in a statistical dead heat? Can you explain?
Yeah, 2019 was actually a perfect case in point. In 2019, in the federal election, the Liberals actually numerically lost the popular vote, but actually won a significantly greater number of seats than the Conservatives, because the Conservatives were winning some seats in the Prairie provinces by 10, 15, 20%. It was very efficient, while the Liberals were winning seats by 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5%. So think of the Liberal support as better spread out across the country in order to convert into seats. And that kind of math is probably what the Liberals are hoping for in order to generate a greater number of seats than the Conservatives would have, even though there's a dead heat.
Yeah, so and now the question is it the size of the minority? I always say scenarios, not predictions. In scenario one, if the Liberals manage to squeak it in, they've got 155 seats now, 170 is what they need for a majority. Real quick, any scenario for a majority for any party?
Well, yes, there is for the Liberals potentially, but they need everything to go right for them in terms of the three-way splits in Ontario and also in BC, and in terms of the fight with the Bloc. So it's kind of like, to win a majority government, the Liberals, everything's got to go right. In the same way, for the Conservatives to win tonight, they need everything to go right for them in terms of some of the races in Atlantic Canada and Ontario and BC.
Right. There's a path for the Conservatives to win, but they got to go on a real heater like the Blue Jays.
Oh, absolutely. They need everything absolutely to go right. And ideally, they would need the Liberals to do something wrong today in order to change the outcome of the election.
Okay. You're watching the GTA, the Greater Toronto Area, and the 905, that whole area. That could basically be the tail of the tape right there, right? Like, they could be, okay, the Liberals have held their fortress, they're going to hang on. But if it's a weak, likely scenario for you is a weaker minority government for the Liberals and a slight increase in the NDP. So the NDP balance of power is actually bolstered in that scenario, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, the interesting thing is that if the NDP end up holding the balance of power in a minority government, we won't find out until British Columbia comes in, because British Columbia is key to their electoral fortunes.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, folks, you know what the NDP is saying. Hey, we have a robust spending plan. This is already a big spending progressive Liberal government. They'll yank it even further to the left. So that's one scenario. Talk about the PPC. Like 6.6%. Nick, I mean, they're a force. Who are they? Where are they distributed? What's animating them?
Well, you know, the thing is no one foresaw the PPC, and it's gone from what I'll say an alternative party to the Conservatives, led by former Conservative Cabinet Minister Maxime Bernier, to a real protest party, a national protest party. But the thing is, for the PPC, their support that they have is more concentrated. It's more concentrated in the Prairie provinces. They actually do well in British Columbia and parts of Ontario, which means in some select races, they can punch above their weight, not in terms of winning, but they could end up splitting some of that Conservative vote, depending on how well they do. And, you know, that's why Erin O'Toole has basically said, if you vote for anyone other than the Liberals, you're probably voting to put the Liberals into power. So the thing is, that's why Erin O'Toole does not want individuals to vote for the people.
If you're voting
party,
for anyone but the Conservatives, you mean?
But the Conservatives, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting because you look at their number, the Conservatives at 31.2, People's Party doesn't exist. You put that 6% or even 75% of that, they win this election.
Yeah, maybe even a majority government.
It's amazing. What about the collapse? The Greens aren't running candidates in 85 ridings. If that vote collapsed, how does that affect the splits in terms of wild card?
Well, that's helped the progressive parties, both the New Democrats and the Liberals. You know, the thing is that the drop for the Greens Party has helped the New Democrats in British Columbia, and it's also helped the Liberals in other parts of the country. But, you know, the Greens, basically, within a week or two of the election starting, Evan, their numbers started to decline because they did not have the same kind of national platform and, what I'll say, campaign that other Green Party leaders have had. And so those voters drifted away probably in week two and were absorbed by both the Liberals and the New Democrats.
You know, folks, I should also say, because you got a million mail-in ballots, we may not know the final result, the size of the minority government, for not just one day, maybe up to 4 days. So there's that. It's consequential. Nick, as you've watched this, biggest surprise and what is the thing that you're looking most for on election night?
The biggest surprise in this election has been the rise of the People's Party and also the drop in the Green Party. And I'm watching for Quebec, those ridings outside of Montreal. If the Bloc hold on to those ridings, that'll affect the Liberals negatively. And then I'll look into the 905. If Erin O'Toole cannot pick up in the 905 and kind of eat into the Liberals in that area, then it won't be a great night for Erin O'Toole and the Conservatives.
Yeah, you know, everything's got to go right for both parties. But Trudeau calls this election, if he's even in a weaker minority, I guess a win is a win in politics. But this is a win with a real asterisk on his potential leadership there. There'll be questions. It's not like he's going to resign, but what a gamble that didn't really pay off. So, Nick, I'll see you tonight on the CTV election coverage special. That's Nick Nanos he's going to be busy. The War Room is next as we break it down with Zane, Tash, and Tom. Lots coming up. Stay with us.
sorting through the changes. Here's Evan Solomon.
Well, it's Election Day, and this is the busiest day inside any political war room, and that's why our political war room is in business.
Let me be perfectly clear.
Putting out misinformation.
And we hear them.
Misleading politics.
What's really important here.
Spreading it online.
Unequivocally.
The War Room.
Zane Velji, political campaign strategist, partner at Northweather. He worked with Calgary Mayor Nad Nenshi, who's had some tough words about Jason Kenney and the situation in Alberta. Tasha Carradine, a principal with Navigator Limited and national political columnist for Post Media. And Tom Mulcair, who's a young upstart. I think he was the leader of the NDP. Oh, yes, he was. And the CTV political analyst. Good election day to you. I've divided this into the gamblers and the wild cards. The liberal gamble, calling an election, a reward or punishment. The conservative gamble, the big rebrand. The liberal, the NDP gamble, can he actually win seats with his kind of courtship of the youth and the TikTok? And then the wild card, the PPC, the Bloc, and the Greens. I'm going to just start with you, Zane. Talk about the Liberal gamble here and what you expect to see, and if Justin Trudeau gets rewarded or punished, and did he manage to frame this bloody election after 36 days?
If Justin Trudeau loses tonight, it will perhaps be the biggest own goal in Canadian political history. If Justin Trudeau gets anything but a majority tonight, he's going to be significantly weakened. I mean, either way, this is not looking great for Trudeau outside of that one possibility of a majority. And then all's forgiven. You were right, boss. You knew the electorate. You had a pulse on it. You knew that, you know, they'd be angry about the question, but you'd answered it correctly. All's forgiven. But if it's any other scenario, Evan, I mean, he's significantly weakened, maybe not in how he governs, but he doesn't get to end his tenure as prime minister perhaps the way he wanted, with a solid sort of majority. He has to perhaps leave, you know, a couple years in or a year into it. It's a very different story for Justin Trudeau. And let's not forget, I've mentioned this before on the show, his campaign tactics during the 36-day pressure cooker were very much based on division, pounding on fractures that existed against anti-vaxxers, et cetera. He's going to have to deal with that if he does indeed continue to govern on the back end of this. So not just a weakened prime minister, but perhaps an even more divided electorate that he then has to preside over, Evan.
Yeah, I'd push back a bit on that, to be candid, only because, you know, I'm with you. His brand is burnt even if he wins this thing. But you know, Tasha, a lot will depend on the political landscape, because in politics, everything's relative. And that brings us to the O'Toole brand, because he gambled that he can transform his party from a Harper party back to a Mulroney party, a progressive party. He jumped a lot of his members with the price on carbon, and he said it's going to be worth it because otherwise we can't win. If he doesn't win today, and the polls don't say he will, but if he maybe squeaks it out, then the question is, can he survive? Has his gamble paid off or not? Or has he alienated a lot of Harper conservatives who said, stop saying that you're not your dad's party. Stop throwing us under the bus. We governed for almost a decade.
Yeah, does he know when to hold them, fold them, walk away or run, right? It's the big question. And I think right now there are rumors and conversations that are happening within the party as to, you know, if he doesn't win, do we go through this whole exercise again? Do we play turf the leader again? I mean, the Conservatives have a bit of a revolving door lately when it comes to their leaders, and every approach has been different. Andrew Scheer did that, you know, I'm Harper with a smile, and O'Toole is now, I'm not Harper, and I'm not your dad. I'm, I guess, Mulroney reincarnated in a way, and I don't know if people have bought that. I think the reason that the Conservatives were broadsided a bit was because of the PPC and the fact that there was this other hardcore element which could have played in their favor, in the sense of, you know, look, we're not those people, and look what a disaster some of the attitudes that they hold, like Alberta, has come to show. But there's the numbers game. And if the PPC siphons enough numbers to deny the Conservatives either victory or even a larger opposition than they have now, then the argument's going to be, well, obviously we need to go back to our base. And so I don't know if O'Toole, I don't see anyone resigning tonight, to be honest with you.
Because no, I agree
I don't
with
think
that.
We'll fully know the results. But I do think in the next year there's going to be a shift, and if this doesn't work out for him, then there will be obviously questions asked, and he might be gone. But then again, maybe he won't. You know, people are kind of tired.
Go ahead, Zane.
I was just going to add on the O'Toole strategy, you know, it might just be a function of timing, right? Mm-hmm. He may have had the right strategy to move the party to the center, but you don't do that in like 36 days, man. You telegraph that for months. You bring people along, evolution, not revolution. And because it was jarring to us as observers and watchers and pundits, it was clearly jarring to the base as well that this is what we're doing. So he may have had the right strategy. He just may have overlaid it with the wrong timeline.
Well, there's a couple things I think branding yourself as Brian Mulroney. One, Brian Mulroney was essentially banished under the Harper years, and he didn't have Harper. So that's tricky. He's already sprung the price on carbon. A lot of MPs who spent years running against it. Okay. I think, you know, the Brian Mulroney strategy, for those who remember, was the grand coalition, but it required you win in Quebec. There's mm-hmm. no signs that O'Toole's going to run through Quebec. He's got the 10 seats there, and if he holds out, he's lucky. So there's no coalition that really includes Quebec. And then finally, remember, Brian Mulroney famously said to John Turner in, I think, the 84 debate, you had an option, sir, about a patronage appointments of senators. Well, Maxime Bernier is saying to conservative voters, you have an option. And if you're mad, Tash, you have an option if as a conservative. Yeah. And they
but
do.
And that's the thing, is there's another place for people to go. And most of the votes that are going PPC that are bleeding from other parties are bleeding from the conservatives. So you've got the disenfranchised, the angry, the people who don't usually vote or using this as a protest vehicle, but you do have some conservatives who say, I feel like O'Toole is a different guy than the guy who ran. And, you know, but there are some differences between how obviously he ran his leadership campaign and how he's running now. So right. They do have a legitimate point there.
Let's bring in Tom Mulcair, because he's with us now, not only in spirit, but in radio. To quote Rush, the spirit of radio. Tom, the big gambles tonight, how do they play out?
Well, I think that what you were just referencing with regard to O'Toole's big gamble, which was the recentering of his party, that's going to play out. Trudeau's been Campbell, obviously, is pulling the plug on an election in the middle of the fourth wave of a pandemic. And, you know, people talked about that for a whole lot, but we don't know how much it's actually going to move votes, or will it just discourage people and leave them at home? I mean, I spent a good part of my weekend prepping and, you know, with a great pollster named Léger. And, you know, he's got numbers similar to the other national polls. It's a really tight race. We can't talk about anything beyond what was already public yesterday, but what we can say is this: in that very tight race, outside influences will come into play. Yeah. I mean, what is the motivation? Who are the most motivated voters? And they're the ones who are actually going to come out and vote. That could have a determining effect. We learned against Scheer that the Liberals have a pretty efficient vote. It's well spread out. You know, the Conservatives tended to be bunched together and only gives you X number of seats in the prairies. So it's going to be fun to watch. And one last thing, I'm sure that everybody's aware of it, but, you know, with them only starting to open the vote, the mail-in vote Tuesday noon, tonight, yeah, when we hit the sack, we're going to look at some numbers. We're going to say, oh, this one is ahead. But if somebody's ahead by 178 votes and you know that there are 2,000 mail-in votes still mm-hmm. to be counted, you can't put that into the win column for anybody.
No, but Tom, real quick, Quebec, did the Bloc hold? Will the Liberals, in your view, can they break through there? Can the Conservatives break through? Or is this essentially status quo there? The Bloc holds, everyone kind of holds, and Quebec doesn't really move the needle.
There are a couple of fights that will be Bloc between the Bloc and the Conservatives. The Liberals around, maybe nipping around in Quebec City a bit. The Bloc seems to have done, from available information, the Bloc seems to have done spectacularly well in getting out the vote on the advance polls, because the advance polls occurred right after the English debate with that question that was really controversial here in Quebec. So we'll see if that plays out, because it was a tight race all around. And the Liberals had sworn at the beginning of the campaign that they were going to steal a bunch of Bloc seats. And the Bloc said that they wanted to go from 32 seats, they wanted to go up to 40. So we're going to see which one of those two predictions is cool. But we have to remember, the Conservatives have to win all the seats that they've got. The Liberals have to hold on to what they've got. And if there's any bleeding in any of the five regions, Atlantic, Quebec, Ontario, Prairies, or BC, it's going to have a determining effect on the result.
Okay, War Room. Now, when we come back, we're going to get Zane. This is really going to be interesting. Zane is going to explain Jagmeet Singh in the shower. I have no idea what this is about. Jagmeet Singh sitting in a shower as an actual political. We'll have to explain it. Jagmeet Singh took a shower fully clothed, and somehow this is supposed to motivate voters. I have no idea. Zane, who's he claims to be the hippest. I have no idea what's happening. We'll do that, plus the wild cards coming up.
finding answers to all your questions. You're listening to The Evan Solomon Show.
Welcome back to the program, everybody. Election Day. We'll get your calls about what you expect, what you want to see, and your questions. But we are inside the war room with the wool room. The war room
the
with
war
Tom Mulcahy.
We're in Woolworths.
We're in Woolworths.
The dining counter. Good.
We are in the middle of Hogwarts with Zane Velji, Tasha Carradine, and it does seem like
if
Hogwarts,
only.
I can hardly wait to listen to you at 3 in the morning.
Yeah, Evan, this is
Evan?
Get the jitters out right now, Solomon.
Who's in Slytherin? I want to know.
Let me tell you something. The value of drinking throughout this is really incredible. 3 in the morning is nothing. It's the next day when it'll be like, oh, that was a great election. Let me start with you, Tash, on this one. Wild cards, because let's be candid. The PPC's here. It's a real issue. You know, even Nick Nano's got them at 6.5%. You got other pollsters having them close to 10. They're going to affect the splits. I guess two questions. What's the impact of the PPC? But more importantly, not just on this election, but long term, is this the arrival of a kind of populist movement that suddenly the conservatives got to really worry about? This is the beginning of a real movement, like the Reform Party was once for, guess what, the Brian Mulroney conservatives.
I think there's some differences between this and the Reform Party. Reform Party grew out of a rather longstanding tradition of grievance against Ottawa by the West. Preston Manning was not new to politics by any stretch. He came from a very political background. His father, of course, was Premier of Alberta. And I think that there was a sense there of carrying this forward to make real lasting change. I think here is more just people who are mad at a whole bunch of things, including some factors that might not stick around. I mean, I hope not anyway, long term, which is the pandemic and vaccinations. I mean, how many elections are we going to be talking about this for? I'd love this to be the last one. So that is a different phenomenon. Now, that said, it depends if they elect people to the House as well. If they do manage to elect people, and right now I know our polling at Navigator shows that there is a likelihood of at least one seat in Alberta going PPC. So they will have some representation. That gets some airtime. That gets some space in the public
conversation. What seat is that? I didn't think that. I mean, that's interesting because the Beauce is Max's seat. And by the way, speaking of political families, as Tom will know and you all know, Maxime Bernier's father was also a PC MP. Then he ran as an independent. So it's not like Max doesn't also have a political lineage, maybe not of the same size as Manning. But what's the riding you're talking about?
I should have looked at because made a report to our meeting this morning on this. That's what they and they don't think Max is going to win. That is not the in the office. But there could be, in theory, up to several seats, depending on the splits that happen across the country, that could be in play because of the PPC vote. So if that happens, then you've got more legitimacy. What happens in the next leaders' debate? We have to get more than 4% of the vote. They're in, folks. So, again, they're not going to go away. But I hope their issues go away, in which case they will not stick around as long, because for the Conservatives, it's a very bad thing to have them splitting the vote.
Well, I wonder, are the sutures that Harper put together on his modern-day conservative party, where social conservatives and rock-ribbed conservatives from out west with Ontario conservatives, are those getting cut by Erin O'Toole and people are just saying, fool me once, not fool me twice? Zane, as he moves to the center, does Maxime Bernier not only capitalize on the anti-vax movement, but actually start getting deeper purple roots there?
That's what their hope is, right? That there's natural seams within the construction of this modern day conservative party. And those seams can be the natural points for ripping off the party and then adding this wave that, yes, comes largely from the conservative movement, but has wildly interesting demographics, geographics regarding anger, regarding that overlay of anger. And I think that anger, to Tasha's point, perhaps in this moment is about the pandemic, but a party like this, I am sure, and I say this begrudgingly because I don't want them to, we'll find something else to volley. We'll find something else to be anti-establishment about. So, if they get electoral success, expect them to keep around and perhaps maybe not grow as big as Reform, but certainly represent an anti-establishment movement that could forever haunt the Conservatives with 3-9% on any given federal election they're on in, and perhaps maybe even has provincial arms in certain jurisdictions that make life uncomfortable for Conservatives across the country.
Tom, your take on that and other movements, you know, look, collapse of the Green Party. I mean, that's interesting because, you know, at the end of the night, maybe not the end of the night, but we're, I think, you know, if Annamae Paul doesn't win, she's got to be out. She can't survive as a leader. If it's a weak conservative performance and they don't take out Justin Trudeau, he even has a strong minority. I think O'Toole's in trouble. If Trudeau loses, he's in trouble. Consequential stuff. What's your take on the wild cards? Or is it a one-off or is it permanent?
Well, Maxime Bernier's obviously been building, if we just look at the last election and this one. But at the same time, going back to our discussion before about the big gamble of O'Toole, which is to recenter the party, is it going to be only negative for him to have had Maxime Bernier there? Or was it possible for him then to look at Canadian voters and say, you see, that's the right-wing party that you're afraid of, not me. So maybe it'll have an effect of taking away some of his vote, but maybe it'll be a leveling effect with regard to mainstream, you know, Canadian politics. At the same time, I couldn't agree more. I mean, with all of the ups and downs that she's been through, and she did so well, by the way, in the debates, it's going to be very tough to imagine how long Annamae Paul being able to stay on for any real length of time after this election. And I think that what we're doing now is talking about an election that basically nobody wanted, and a result that nobody can predict. And this is what's so unique about this situation. I've been at this for a whole long time, and I've never seen anything like it, because there is so much on the table, just the conversation that we've just had. So vox populi, vox Dei. You know, people are going to have the final word today.
By the way, some people are texting me like, hey, there's a picture of Justin Trudeau in blackface. Again, it's circulating around. It appears to be the same event as we'd seen before. But it seems to be a new picture. So now I don't know, but it's circulating around. And hey, welcome to the last days of the campaign. This emerges now.
The last hour.
The Hunter Biden laptop equivalent of the campaign, so to speak.
Yeah, I don't know. Zane, you're out in Alberta. I know the situation with Jason Kenney out there, and the horrible situation with COVID. I don't want to make Jason Kenney the victim of it. The victim are the people in the hospitals here. Does this have a consequential impact on the campaign for either O'Toole or Trudeau?
Yes, to both. I mean, initially when the news came out of Alberta on Wednesday evening when Kenny made this announcement, most of us watchers here knew about the palpable anger in Alberta, but thought that the timing of this story would only last a day or two. But O'Toole's refusal to answer the question a dozen times on Thursday, or on Friday, I should say, and then go dark over the weekend with the media, which was a strategy I would not advise, has made it worse for him. And it's allowed Trudeau to shadow box against Kenny in a way that he hasn't had a chance to in a free lane before. So I think Trudeau's played it nicely in the sense that he hasn't gone so aggressive trying to dunk on a 6-foot net against Jason Kenny. He's been, you know, keeping it above the fray. But man, oh man, has O'Toole made a bad situation worse by not having an answer and then subsequently going dark and then canceling on your colleagues at CTV, Evan, with that one-on-one sit down as well.
Tash, who's giving him advice? Like, O'Toole had an opening. Like, Jason Kenney apologizes. Yeah. He's admitted an error.
Yeah.
O'Toole could have piled on.
Here's the answer. Jason Kenney was right in the first wave. He is wrong now. Let's move on. Sorry, Tasha.
Well, he could have definitely finessed it. He should have given an answer, whatever the answer was, but he could have finessed it. And just, you know, you're not going to lose.
We're out of time. Zane took your time.
So
Tasha, Tom, and Zane.
Sorry.
We'll be back tomorrow. Blame. Guys, good luck tonight. I got to take a break. You're the best.
Get complete federal election coverage tonight starting at 6:30. Now back to Evan Solomon on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
It is your turn, Election Day. Just go for it. What do you want to see? What do you expect to see? Are the PPC for real? Did the vaccine situation impact your vote? What really determined your vote? I'd love to hear from you today. Have your say. Any questions you have about how to vote, where to vote, let me know. 1-855-633-1010. 1-855-633-1010 or 71010. Maybe you want to know, what happens if? What happens if Justin Trudeau wins a slim minority and the NDP are their dance partner, but they've got more seats? Where does the country go from there? What happens if everything goes right and Aaron O'Toole squeaks in a minority, then what? Who survived? Does Trudeau survive that? But if the polls are right and it's a liberal minority, did the conservatives' gamble pay off? Should they have tacked to the center, or do they tack back right? Have they opened up turf that they can never get back? Are the PPC here permanently, or just are they a flash in the vax pan? Have your say, election day. We got two blocks of this. I want to hear from you. Maybe the pundits got it all wrong. Look, I've studied the polls. We talked to pollsters. My belief, in the end, is not that pollsters are wrong, but voters are right. Voters tell the truth. Voters are in there. You know, if it's a liberal minority, they say, hey, Justin Trudeau, you could drive the car, but you need a chaperone. We don't trust you. You don't get a majority. In fact, we're going to give you two chaperones. If Aaron O'Toole has done this gamble and he does win, they say, okay, you can try it out. Let's give you a taste. You know, look, minority governments are the way Canadians are functioning these days. Let's take some calls at 1-855-633-1010 or 71010. You could text me. Frank is in the beautiful city of Montreal. Frank, what's going on?
How are you?
I am on fire, man. This is what we train for. Love these days.
You know, well, we're in the province of Quebec here, where politics is like a full-time job here for everybody.
Yeah, of course. So, that's good. You're swimming in it.
Either you know, that's how it is here. And you know, I'm very surprised that, first of all, the way the elections were called. But I think in this province of Quebec here, I think we Quebecers tend to be very confused voters. You know, a couple of years ago, the Bloc was out, NDP was in, Liberals, we're all over the place here. And we don't have, at one point, Parti Québécois, even if you look at the local elections here, provincial elections, Quebecers have always voted on emotions. They have
yes.
never voted based on logic or based on the platform. I remember when the NDP, when at one point, they had a whole set of votes and seats here, right? And then
sure.
in the last elections, they lost everything, right? So Quebec is a place where you can never predict Quebec. You can never predict Quebecers because everything they do here is based on emotions.
Yeah, Frank, I appreciate the call. In 2008, the Orange Wave, when they got 59 seats in Quebec under Jack Layton, yeah, that was a wave. Quebec has moved from Brian Mulroney had the biggest majority in Canadian history. Quebec sweeps Quebec, PC sweep. The Orange Wave sweep. The Bloc sweep after the PC collapse. Of course, the Bloc Quebecois owned it. Then the Bloc were swept out by the NDP. Then the NDP were swept out, who, by the Liberals? Then the Liberals swept out by the Bloc last time. So, yeah, it moves. I don't think it's all emotion, but I think the idea of party loyalty has changed. I think people are shoppers, shopping for votes, as Susan Delacourt once wrote about. So good point, Frank. I appreciate that. Phil, what's up, Phil? What's your take?
Oh, excuse me. I apologize.
Go for it, Phil. You're talking to the country, my man.
I believe that you're bang on the money that it's too close calling a conservative liberal run. I believe that if O'Toole doesn't win a very, very thin minority, that he will be ousted. Trudeau, the same thing. I believe the big surprise is the PCP party, or PPC, excuse me, in Quebec. I believe with the lockdowns in Quebec and the way that was handled, it was sort of a regime outfit. I like to comment the callers before me just made. Very emotional crowd. You mentioned the green, or the Orange Crush movement at
In Quebec, vote. The Orange Wave under Layton, yeah?
I believe that was a sympathy vote. I believe there was nothing for Quebec to vote NDP back then. And I believe it's going to be a eye-opener for a lot of Canadians. In the West, too, I believe the PPC is making a lot of movement.
Would you consider voting PPC ever?
I'm going to disclose I did vote PPC. I was going to vote Libertarian. I didn't have a candidate in my ward.
So tell me about that. Like, I think this is interesting. So you decided in the end that the PPC represented a kind of frustration with all the lockdowns, and that's where you parked your vote.
I believe that, you know, vaccines are the way to go. People need to think about this Delta strain. It's a scary thing. But they don't need to be told that they give their kids IRM up for nobody. Nobody gives up their kid to anybody for any school system, for any taxation or threat of a loss of a job. And that was my primary reason. I'm going to get the vaccine. I'm going to get it when I feel it's my right time. But I'm not going to be told when to get it.
And okay, so you haven't. So I just want to be clear. So, Phil, at this point, you're okay with it, but you still haven't got vaxxed.
I haven't gotten because I'm listening to the stories of the people getting sick. And I believe that there's something is astray. Like, I think there may be a rush-to-market problem or there's a procurement problem. And we heard all the stories before the vaccine came to where
well,
I
you
am.
Know, Phil, listen, I've been pretty, and I appreciate the call, first of all. You know I'm pretty adamant that just on a couple of those points. I've asked every doctor. I've asked Health Canada agency. There was no, quote, rush to market. All the same protocols for any vaccine were followed. They just put massive resources to manufacture it. But these mRNA vaccines have been in the pipeline for years. But obviously, like any vaccine, they're trying to deal with the virus at hand. In terms of safety, you know, this has been injected in hundreds of millions of people around the world. Yeah, there are some adverse effects like in any vaccine, but not remotely the adverse effects of I mean, the cost-benefit analysis so overwhelming according to every medical doctor. So that's where I stand, and I think that's where the majority of people stand. But Phil, like, I'm empathetic that you're open about this and you're concerned about the efficacy. Those are real discussions. The people that have conspiracy theories about this stuff, I have less time for. But, you know, you're going to get it, and I hope you do, Phil, because, gosh, I hope you don't get sick before that happens. Rose in Richmond Hill, what's up?
Yes, hi. Yes, I'm sort of on the opposite end of the spectrum here. I'm a conservative, and I usually vote conservative, but I don't like the way O'Toole has sort of skirted around the vaccine mandates and the passports. I'd like to see those because I want to feel safe when I'm on an airplane, when I'm in a restaurant. And I wanted him to say that out loud, but he went in the opposite direction. And I am not—I'm still not sure how I'm going to vote today. I'll be honest with you. I'm almost thinking to vote Liberal, and then I'll have to take a shower.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think there might be some of that. I let me just say one thing on that, Rose. And don't worry, folks, if you're calling in at 1-855-633-1010 or texting me at 71010, we're going to do this over the break as well for the next segment. So I'll get a lot of calls in. But here's what I don't really understand about the O'Toole gamble on that. I know part of his base is like Phil, right? That they don't want the mandatory vaccine for at least his... Remember, there's no mandatory vaccine. Like, you have to take it, you're thrown in jail. You just, you know, if you don't have vaccine, it's like now, if you don't have the measles shot, you can't send your kids to public schools. No different than that. You just, right. you got limited access. What's interesting that O'Toole decided to gamble, and he said, hey, I know the price on carbon for conservatives is so darn controversial, but I'm going to gamble and impose that on all conservatives. But on a life-saving vaccine, which he himself says he agrees on, he wouldn't even say that to his own members. Like, 95% of people in his party are going to get it anyway, or 90, right? Like, why did he take a stand on carbon? Where it's but on vaccines, he didn't, for his own party. And I don't understand that, because it allowed Trudeau to have a wedge. And people like you are saying, hey, if you can't take a stand on, like, what, you know, 27,000 Canadians are dead, businesses are shut, hundreds of billions of dollars have been spent, and like, we can't, I don't know. For me, that wasn't as hard an issue as he, but that's a great point. Well, good luck in your vote today. 1-855-633-1010 or 71010. Have your say on this election next.
Making sense of the latest news. You're listening to The Evan Solomon Show.
Hey, it's up to you. 1-855-633-1010 or 71010. You know what would be cool? Instead of just voting, like marking your ballot, you could also leave like a voice message to the parties. Like, okay, here's my ballot. It's like, here's why I voted. And you get like 15 seconds. But if you can't do that, you can talk to us on our program across this beautiful nation of ours. Listen, I like the exercise of democracy. I don't know if this was the right time, and Trudeau may get wickedly punished for it, but there's something about democracy that gets into my heart, that we get to do this peacefully. 1-855-633-1010, 71010. Evan, is Trudeau out if he doesn't get a majority? No. If he wins a minority, as Jean Chrétien said, a win is a win is a win. Is his brand weakened? Yes. Does he leave? No. You don't win the election and leave. That's just not, he will not resign if he wins, even if he wins a weaker majority. Evan, what about a conservative minority win? There is a path, as Nick Nano said. Everything's got to break right. Everything has to break right. It's a narrow path. You know, it's you'd probably write a book called The Lord of the Rings about it, because it would be a hobbit's journey to get there. Possible? Sure. Yeah. And if that happens, the math changes. But there has been, you know, underneath this dead heat, the logic of the vote efficiency of the Liberals in Ontario changes that. Evan, what happens if the Bloc is the only kingmaker? Probably won't happen. If there's a very thin Liberal or conservative minority, let's say Liberal minority only because that's what the polls are saying, they'd have a dance partner in the NDP. But if the NDP doesn't have enough to bring them over the 170, the Bloc would be there. They would therefore be a kingmaker in some ways if the CPC didn't vote for the Liberals, or vice versa. But if it's a conservative thin minority, yeah, then, you know, if they can't, what would happen actually is if the Bloc are the kingmakers, they'd have to decide, A, if they want to work with the Bloc. But if they can't and they can't pass it, then the Governor General literally could say to Justin Trudeau, you have the right to try to form a government, and maybe Trudeau does a government with the NDP and the Bloc. I mean, that can actually happen. So, you know, there's lots going on here. Let's take some more calls and I'll get some more of those questions in. Man, Rose, what's up? How you doing, Rose? Do I have you, Rose? Oh, Faye. I talked to Rose. Faye, I got you. What's up, Faye?
Yeah, hi. I'm calling from Montreal. I'm just annoyed at Justin Trudeau for calling this election now. We all know why he did, but it's just such a waste of time and money. I mean, there's so much more that we should be concentrating on. I'm annoyed at him because of the quarantine hotels that he declared in the winter, sending seniors who lived alone, like who were coming from wherever and who were vaccinated, coming from Florida, and sending them to a hotel was just ridiculous. It was like not a well thought out plan. And I know there was support from many Canadians, but it was a ridiculous, ridiculous plan. It was just unfair. The story you hear about it, people who are getting fined, was insane. I was annoyed at him, and I had called my MP, and I didn't even get a call back. I got a call back from her assistant, not from her, which annoyed me. I called twice, and she didn't even have the courtesy to call me back. And I was annoyed because they had, like, for students, they were supposed to be allowed to avoid the quarantine hotel, and then they removed that that clause without telling anybody, and people got caught at the airport coming from abroad, where putting a 19-year-old in a quarantine hotel is ridiculous and dangerous. And let them
so enough. So should this cost him the election?
Well, you know what? He handled so many things badly during COVID. And what was with his vaccine procurements in the beginning? We were lagging behind the U.S. by about 3-4 months. He was trying to get vaccines from China in the beginning. Like, what was that about?
Okay, you're. I'm going to use your word because you've used it. You are annoyed. I think this is a really fair point, Faye. Many people may be so annoyed they turn them off. On the China thing, yes, Canada was working with CanSino to try to develop a vaccine. They were working with lots of people. In the end, Canada, bought, and I think, thank goodness, in the end, it took a long time. You're right, it was super slow at the beginning, but we don't manufacture vaccines. Thank goodness, at least we bought, you know, AstraZeneca, Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson.
Started on AstraZeneca because that was a bungled vaccine.
Hey, I have one shot of it in my arm. I'm with you. I'm fine, yeah. But no, listen, Faye, good call. And that may turn off a lot of people. There may be many, many people like Faye out there. What about Rob in St. Thomas? How you doing, Rob?
How are you doing?
Hey, man, I'm great. What's cooking? What's your take on all this?
Well, I'd like to see a PC minority win, but I feel anybody that's voting for the PPC is just doing a wrong thing here, because the whole point of the game here is to get rid of Trudeau. and they're just splitting the vote on the right.
Sorry, let me just, I'm trying to understand this. You're saying PC like Progressive Conservative or People's Party, because there is no Progressive Conservative Party.
Okay,
there's
well,
only
well,
a, there's no I only, but I think that's interesting that you say that, because Otua would like you to, because he's trying to transform it from the Conservative Party back to the Progressive Conservative Party of like Joe Clark and Brian Mulroney. So that's interesting that you're saying that's the party you'd like to see.
Yeah, I would like to see the Conservatives have a win. And if you're voting PC as a protest voter or anything like that, that's, you're just defeating the purpose of trying to get rid of Trudeau by splitting the vote on the right. You're doing more harm than good.
Yeah, well, listen, I appreciate the call. What's great to see, or not great to see, but fascinating to see, I think, is better, is the vote splits. You know, the Liberals are always accused of playing that strategic vote card. A vote for the NDP is a vote for the Conservatives, and they strip the NDP of their vote. And for the first time, I guess since the Reform Party, you're seeing the Conservatives saying a vote for the PPC is a vote for the Liberals. So both the Conservatives and the Liberals are both playing the strategic vote card. How ironic is that? Because they're both, let's call it the big squeeze. They're both getting squeezed. Steve, what's up?
Yeah, hi, Evan.
What's your take?
Yeah, my story is I was born in 1962. So when I turned 18, the first time I ever got to vote was during the Quebec referendum. Obviously, I voted no to separate. That was in 1980. And the leader, my leader, was Pierre Elliott Trudeau and also Jean Chrétien. And since then, in every single election, whether it be provincial or federal, I voted Liberal. And today, I was waiting in line at 9:30 a.m. I was the second person in line. I voted in NDG, where I live, Notre-Dame-de-Gras in the Monkland Village. And once again, I voted Liberal, Justin Trudeau. And I'm praying that he gets a majority, because he is obviously the leader we need. And
so you're okay.
Far,
so you're okay. So Steve, you've got long. That's look at that. So that's a long time Liberal, and I appreciate the call. I just got a couple minutes here, Steve. I appreciate the call. A lot of people, you know, listen. There's long time Conservatives, long time Liberals, long time NDPers. Someone just said, Evan, polls mean nothing today, especially after what we saw happen in the U.S. with Trump. We need a new set of potential leaders. It's like we're stuck in the same loop. Our politics needs to evolve, says Jimmy. Yeah, polls are adjusting, Jimmy. We'll find out if they're right. A lot of them are actually pretty accurate, but you're right. Their voters are angry. There's late-breaking polls, and there's advanced polls. So that's why I always say, I never make predictions. These are likely or unlikely scenarios, but you're right. Voters are the truth. The vote is the truth. Going to be a lot of issues, Evan, with the mail-in votes. Let me address that. Mail-in votes will be counted after tomorrow, and that may decide some writings. I just want every listener to know this, and this is really important. Every single vote that you cast is counted transparently in front of, openly, with witnesses from every party. There's no secret counting. There's no ballot stuffing. The parties are witnessing it. It's a very transparent and fair and open process. And I you could get on the internet and read all sorts of crap about that. It's not, I'm telling you, call the Conservative Party headquarters, call the Liberal Party, call the PPC, call the NDP. It's fair. They're counted openly. So, you know, don't get blown by some of those wins, okay? And that'll take you down a very dark rabbit hole, okay? But listen, I would say this, your vote matters. This is a minority government. There are going to be ridings that will be decided by a couple hundred votes. Voting matters. Now the question is consequences, scenarios and consequences next. Wait till you hear this.
Don't miss a moment of our comprehensive coverage of the federal election tonight, starting at 6:30. Now, back to Evan Solomon on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
So there's two parts to this. What the hell's going to happen tonight? And then the scenarios and the consequences. liberal minority, weak minority, strong minority? What does it mean? Who's the dance partner? What does it mean for the country? What does it mean for the leadership? O'Toole, can he pull off a conservative minority? Conservative majority? No poll says that, but okay. Conservative minority, what's the scenario there? The PPC, what happens to them, the Bloc? Can the NDP gain back the 20 seats they lost in the last election? Or are they the kingmaker again? Scenarios and consequences for the leaders. And if the Green leader, Annamie Paul, doesn't win a Toronto Centre, I mean, how long could she last? Marika Walsh is a political reporter with the Globe and Mail. Steph Levitz is a reporter with the Canadian Press, and her mom wants me to call her Stephanie. Ryan Price, news director and afternoon drive host of CFAX in 1070 in Victoria, where we will be staying up because BC might be the tail of the tape. Ryan, Steph, and Marika, this is great. Steph, what are you looking for tonight? I mean, if the polls are right and if it's a minority government of some sort, play out a scenario of a weak or strong liberal minority and the consequences of that.
So, you know, lots of big questions. One, of course, is what happens to Quebec? And, you know, there was a point in time, I think the Liberals thought one of their roads to majority government went right through Quebec and that they were going to pick up seats there and be able to deliver a majority. We had some turning point moments along the campaign trail, most notably the English language debate, which put a lot of wind into the sails of Bloc Québécois leader Yves-François Blanchet.
Right.
So how many seats does he pick up in the end? And then conversely, or at the same time, how many seats does the NDP pick up, if any? And who ends up ultimately holding the balance of power in a minority government situation? Because that could mean a lot of different things. I mean, if the Liberals have a strong minority, you know, do they just, they need the NDP to dance? If they have a weak minority, can they make a deal with the NDP, prop up some kind of coalition government? I know those are scary, evil words, Evan, that people freak out about, but it is within our parliamentary system to do that. And so those are a couple of things for the Liberals. Who is going to be their dance partner if they do come away with another minority government?
Yeah, and let me bring in Marika. Marika, I was talking to Jenny Byrne yesterday, who's the former Stephen Harper campaign director, and here's what Jenny said. If there, if Erin O'Toole doesn't win, even if Trudeau's got a thin minority, but if Erin O'Toole doesn't win, she says he will pay a price for the rebrand of his party, which I'm not sure if the knives are out or not, but here's Jenny Byrne on that. Listen to this. I'll play the clip in a minute. Marika, what's your sense of the consequences of a liberal minority? I'll play that clip when we have it. It just froze.
It really depends, Evan, on what the minority looks like. Is it a weakened minority? Is it a stronger minority? Or is it the status quo? I think that it's hard for me to see a scenario where if Erin O'Toole does not grow his caucus, he is able to stay on. Just because I feel like there are so many disaffected groups within the conservative base who supported him during the leadership campaign and who are now wondering why they did that because of what he put on the table in this campaign. It was different than what he did in the leadership. So that is something he is going to have to contend with. But again, it just depends on the results tonight. You got to remember, before this election started, conservatives and liberals were writing Erin O'Toole off. They said he was a no-hoper. People thought the liberals would be walking, you know, taking a stroll to a majority government. That did not happen in any way, shape, or form. And so it really depends on how he manages tonight, how he manages expectations, and how quickly he's able to manage his caucus, whatever the result is tonight.
Yeah, here's Jenny Byrne just to play that. I'm with you. He's overperformed expectations, but, you know, I don't know what that means. Here's what Jenny Byrne said.
Declared the winner of the 44th general election of the 44th parliament, I think that he will have a hard time staying on as leader.
Yeah, if he's not the winner. Let me go to Ryan. Ryan, BC's a three-way battle here. Just give us a sense of that. I think people are going to be up late to decide to figure out do the NDP have a run there? Do the CPC have a run there? Can the Liberals pull it off? What are you hearing out in BC?
First off, it is exciting to be in a province that matters. Look at this. The election, it won't be decided before our polls even close, which is so often what happens here in BC. This thing already has a direction before we even count our votes. But you're right. BC's crazy right now. I mean, I think listeners here obviously know this, but for anybody else, BC is also, on one hand, a place where all the parties are polling fairly strongly, but it's fairly concentrated in a lot of spots. I'm on Vancouver Island. We are this orange splash of color on a map with some green dots, and the green dots are really an interesting part of the story for the island. But you know, we're pretty on the left of things on the island. You go to the interior of BC, the north of BC, it's conservative. It's you know, kind of aligned more with Alberta in some ways of thinking. I don't want to paint everybody with too broad a brush, but you know, you got very strong conservative polling in BC, but it's concentrated in an area. Then there's the lower mainland, the area around Vancouver, where there are so many interesting battles. You've got toss-ups between Liberals and NDP here, Conservatives and Liberals here, Conservatives and NDP here. It's wild. And that's where I think things will really come down, because you've got these areas where it's not only just like leading between one party or the other. All three of them could be in the mix. So if we're in a situation where Justin Trudeau or Erin O'Toole are trying to eke out a minority government here somehow, those handful of lower mainland Vancouver area ridings will really come into play, and we might be waiting to see. But here's another thing. I just want one more thing to throw in. Of the top 10 ridings that requested mail-in ballots, seven of those ridings were in BC. We have high percentage of people who have either advance voted or mail-in voted, and some of those votes are going to be counted quite late. The mail-in ones, I understand, we won't even get those counted until maybe tomorrow.
Tuesday, so if they count, yeah.
Yeah, so if we're at a point where BC is deciding this thing, and so many British Columbians have decided not to vote on actual election day, it's going to be interesting to see if we even, if it gets that far, what happens, and we might have a delayed result.
Yeah, before I go, I swing back to Stephanie Levitz, first I got to call her Stephanie, and I've got one note from her mom. Then I referenced her with her old job at the Canadian Press. She's at the Toronto Star. Now I'm going to get two notes from your mom, Steph.
I wish. I wish.
What a disaster. Toronto Star, Stephanie, my God, I can't win on this one.
We're tired. It's been a long 5 weeks after a long 18 months, right?
I know, but Ryan's right, though, right? I think what's going to, the NDP is a really interesting story, because as this unfolds, Steph, we'll see, you know, maybe they pick up Halifax. That would be a big win. Maybe they pick up, Danforth in Toronto. Their strength will not really be evident and what happens until British Columbia. And I think Ryan's not wrong there. And then you got the mail-in factor. Holy mackinac, we could have a long tail here, couldn't we?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm looking for the NDP to see how they do in a couple other places, though. Like, can they pick up some seats in Hamilton? Would be one place. What happens in Saskatchewan, excuse me, or Alberta, where, you know, the NDP are generally the second place finishers in some of those ridings? And is there frustration enough there with pandemic management? And we can get into the whole, you know, what happened with Jason Kenney in Alberta in the last week or so. There's other places for the NDP to make gains, and there's places where they've been really looking to make gains and have tried to direct some of their firepower in that direction.
Yeah, well, Windsor to Tecumseh in the west, and as you say, they've got a couple in around Edmonton. They may, and maybe in Saskatchewan, they have a couple that they could pick up there. Marika, what are you looking for in that department, or like just swing over consequences if you can in the last minute? I mean, I know you guys are going to stick around, but the PPC also, like, they may win one seat, maybe two, but I think their influence is far more evident than just on the seats they win.
Evan, this is going to be, I think, the campaign where the smaller third parties are the story of this campaign. And it's the story of the campaign, whether they show up to vote or not, because they have gotten so much attention in the last few weeks of this election race, because we do see them growing in the polls. So whether or not they win seats, are they actually a spoiler on the right or the left? Will the NDP vote hold? That, I think, is a big question. Will they actually hold at around 20% as the polls have showed, or does the Liberal strategic vote and the fear of a conservative government that the Liberals pitch every election actually sway voters? Those third parties, the Bloc, the NDP, and the PPC, and the Green Party, are going to be what decides this election.
Okay, you know, Marika, Stephanie, Ryan, hang on. Let me take a break. We got a whole nother segment. We're coming back with more consequences.